Welcome to the ESVS podcast. My name is Agla Kovadonite. Today, we will be talking about vascular access with the current and former chairs of the ESVS Academy Dialysis Pathway. We recorded the first podcast during the annual meeting in Krakow, focusing on the Academy pathway in this field, and we're going to dig deeper, this time into current knowledge and gaps of evidence in vascular access construction. We have the pleasure to have with us today Drs. Flavia Gentile and Roberta Brambilla. Dr. Gentile is a visceral and vascular surgeon at the center in Luxembourg, and Dr. Brambilla is a transplant surgeon with a special interest in vascular access. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much, Agla.
This podcast will be a two-part discussion. In the first part, we will be talking about preoperative planning, patient selection, and assessment. The second part will be about surgical techniques, complications, and follow-up. The ESVS Clinical Practice Guidelines on Vascular Access were released back in 2018. So the first question is a must. Do you know when the update of the guidelines is planned for it? And is there a dire need for an update?
Oh yeah, that's true. I mean, was already 2018. So, and the new guidelines are supposed to be released in 2026. So we are approaching the deadline. And yeah, definitely there's a need to have an update because so much is happening in terms of technology and non-invasive techniques. So yeah, we are looking forward to complete the job and have those guidelines released.
Great. Now let's get started with the pre-planning and assessment of AVFs. What are your preoperative vein and artery mapping protocols? And how often do you use ultrasound or other imaging modalities for these assessments?
Personally, I perform ultrasound almost all the time, unless there's a clear favorable anatomy, which is actually uncommon for this kind of patient. Preoperative vein and artery mapping for hemodialysis is crucial for ensuring the optimal vascular access creation. And this process helps us to select the most suitable site for a fistula or for a graft, which is vital for effective and long-term hemodialysis. So key components of the mapping process are the following. We start with clinical assessment. Patient history. So first step is reviewing the patient medical history, including previous dialysis access surgeries, conditions such as diabetes or peripheral vascular disease, and vascular risk factors. Then we have the clinical examination, which is performed to identify palpable veins, their size, potential sign of previous access failure or venous stenosis. An imaging technique. Ultrasound is the most commonly used imaging modality for preoperative vein and artery mapping, and it provides real-time high-resolution images to assess both the size of the veins and the arteries, and as we say, the presence of thrombosis or stenosis. And then, well, evaluation of anatomical suitability, site selection, so based on ultrasound findings. The most suitable site for a creation of fistula is selected, and in general, the goal is to choose the non-dominant arm. Very important is also the mapping of the arteries, because radial ulnar brachial arteries are typically evaluated, and we just check, well, size, if there's any calcification, and flow.
In the 2018 guidelines, the threshold for considering performing an AVF were an inner radial arterial diameter and or cephalic venous diameter of 2 millimeters each by ultrasound measurement. Is this still so, or is there new evidence to recommend otherwise?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question because, I mean, while the 2 millimeter threshold for both the radial artery and the cephalic vein has remained the accepted guideline, newer evidence and the expert opinion have provided some nuance in how we interpret and apply these measurements. So studies have generally supported the 2 millimeter threshold as a reasonable limit, as smaller arteries tend to be less reliable in providing sufficient blood flow for a fistula. However, bigger diameters are still preferred and they might result in better long-term outcomes, including reduced rate of failure. But recent studies have shown that arteries slightly smaller than 2 millimeter may still be used actually for fistula creation, particularly if there's a good arterial inflow and no significant risk factors or complication. However, patients with smaller arteries may have a higher rate of fistula failure, so may perhaps go for a closer monitoring and possibly early revision. So in some setting, especially patients with limited vascular access option, we might still consider fistula creation with veins, which are more than 1.5 millimeter, but less than 2 is often associated with a higher failure rates.
Besides caliber, do you also look for any particular wall characteristics or anatomical variations that might influence access site selection?
Absolutely. So the quality of a vessel wall is just as important as the size in determining if it will support or not a durable and functional fistula. So thickened or fibrotic walls, they we often see in veins with the history of previous access or chronic disease such as diabetes, hypertension, may reduce the vein's ability to expand and mature properly, so increasing the risk of failure. Sclerotic veins are less compliant, so they reduce elasticity, can impact the fistula maturation. An healthy vein should be able to expand in response to increased blood flow after fistula creation. So stiff or calcified veins are not suitable because they are less likely to expand and accommodate higher pressure. Arterial inflow is equally important because it needs to provide sufficient blood flow to maintain fistula function. So arterial stenosis is also a critical factor when we evaluate arteries for fistula creation. Narrowing can limit blood flow and so lead to poor maturation or early failure.
How do you evaluate the impact of comorbidities like diabetes, hypertension, or peripheral arterial disease on the selection and expected patency of vascular access? Are there any specific thresholds for these conditions that might lead you to avoid certain types of access or adjust surgical techniques?
Yeah, evaluating impact of the comorbidities such as diabetes, hypertension, peripheral arterial disease is crucial when planning vascular access because this condition can really impact and influence both the selection of access site and the expected patency of the access. They can affect the quality of veins and arteries, the ability to create a functional fistula, and the long-term maintenance of the fistula. In diabetic patients, for example, arterial calcification or stenosis can be very pronounced. So this leads to inadequate arterial inflow. And veins can also be more prone to fibrosis or stenosis. If, for example, radial artery or cephalic vein is less than 2 millimeter in diameter, it might be challenging to create a functional fistula in diabetic patient, especially if we have other signs of arterial disease, poor flow, sclerosis. So higher threshold maybe should be preferred. Same for impaired vein elasticity and fibrosis. This can reduce the chance of successful maturation. In some setting, considering an arteriovenous graft, which is less dependent on vein quality, may be preferred if the vein quality is poor or the patient has a history of poor fistula maturation.
Do you routinely assess for central venous stenosis or cardiac function before creating an access? If so, what testing do you prioritize?
Yes, I do. So routinely assessing for central venous stenosis and cardiac function is very important before creating a vascular access. Both central venous stenosis and impaired cardiac function can significantly affect the success of dialysis access, especially in those patients who have had multiple access sites, previous catheterization, those who are at risk of heart failure or vascular disease. So how we do assess, for example, for central venous stenosis, we always start with a history. So a detailed history of previous dialysis access is crucial. Previous use of jugular subclavian catheters is particularly concerning. And then we evaluate the physical signs such as swelling in the arms or distended neck veins, or collateral circulation in the chest or the shoulder may suggest venous stenosis. Then we continue with ultrasound, which is primary non-invasive imaging technique, and we can assess central veins. And if the results are not conclusive or there's high clinical suspicion for severe stenosis, I think that a venogram should be performed. It's particularly helpful in identifying complete occlusion or a more complex multi-level stenosis. And for the cardiac function, we start always with clinical history, collecting data about heart failure, previous infection, valvular heart disease. We attend to symptoms such as shortness of breath, fatigue, edema. The echocardiogram is generally the gold standard for assessing cardiac function.
For patients with failed access or a history of multiple prior accesses, how do you approach the planning for a new access creation?
We have a couple of points we need to attention for those patients with failure or multiple prior accesses. So first, we need to have a comprehensive vascular assessment, so both arterial and venous mapping, and very importantly, central venous assessment. The second thing is optimizing comorbidities, so hypertension, diabetes, cardiac factors. The preoperative imaging, yeah, it's crucial, and sometimes even the intraoperative decision making with real-time vascular mapping. And the monitoring, I believe, should be more strict for those patients compared to the standard patient.
And what preventative measures do you implement to reduce postoperative complications, such as stenosis or thrombosis in fistulas?
Most importantly, the preoperative planning, so comprehensive vascular mapping, optimization of comorbidities, as we just said, surgical technique, optimal vessel selection, minimal trauma during surgery, proper anastomosis technique. In terms of postoperative care, early monitoring, avoiding compression trauma, ongoing surveillance, yeah, regular Doppler ultrasound to detect early stenosis or thrombosis, and intervene with angioplasty if it's needed. And also patient education, teach patient about proper care of the fistula and those warning signs of complication. So also the importance of regular follow-ups. If we implement of those measures, the risk are of stenosis, thrombosis, access failure can be reduced, and we can improve the long-term function and patency of the fistula.
Great. And to finish off our first part of the podcast, are there any aspects of the preoperative assessment that have changed dramatically in the last couple of years that the previous 2018 vascular access guidelines do not represent?
Yes, several aspects of preoperative assessment have evolved in recent years, particularly with advancement in technologies, changes in clinical practice, a deeper understanding of patient risk factors. So, for example, while 2018 vascular access guidelines may still provide a good foundation, there's a lot of updates in change and in practice. We focus more on multidisciplinary team, so an increased recognition of the value of a multidisciplinary team approach in preoperative planning. So vascular surgeon, cardiologist, nephrologist, dialysis nurses, interventional radiologists are often involved in the decision-making process, particularly for complex cases, patient education and shared decision making. So there has been a shift towards more patient-centered care with important emphasis on shared decision making, and patients are more actively involved in this process regarding their vascular access option, especially with the advent of less invasive techniques, such for example, percutaneous fistula. And then we have obviously the minimal invasive vascular access technique, like endovascular technique. Over the last few years, there's been increase of percutaneous techniques for vascular access, which are considered less invasive and have a quicker recovery time. And so increased focus on those technique.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to get our hands on the new vascular access guidelines. So this was the first part of the two-part podcast. And remember, you can find all the ESVS podcast episodes in Spotify, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, and the ESVS library. Keep tuned and talk to you soon.